From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in March of last year when a group of students at West Texas A&M wanted to host a charity event on campus. According to the New York Times, the student group, called Spectrum WT, had organized a drag show as a fundraiser for suicide prevention. The university's president canceled the show, describing drag performance as derisive, divisive, and demoralizing misogyny. He pointed to the Bible and other religious texts. A harmless drag show, he went on? It's not possible, end quote. Students sued the university and held the event off campus. This year, as they were planning another drag show, they asked for a court order to allow for the event to be held on campus. They pointed to the First Amendment, which protects expressive conduct and stage performances, and what happened next made national news. The students' request was denied by a federal district court judge who had been appointed by former President Trump. That judge said that it is not clearly established that all drag shows are inherently expressive. The students then, has he been to a drag show? The students then filed an emergency application with the Supreme Court. The court rejected that request, at least temporarily. The Texas story is just one of the growing number of attempts in different states to regulate or ban drag shows. In 2023, states like Tennessee and Montana also passed those kinds of laws, but in many cases, judges have blocked them. It's a question of how far this goes and if the U.S. Supreme Court is going to take this up eventually. So far, they have decided that they don't want to do that. We're talking with local drag performers, not only about those trends, about the courts. They love talking about courts. If you've ever been to a drag show, it's very political. It's just like a Sunday morning news show. That's not what it's actually like. And they're really just here to preview the upcoming RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion performance in Rochester. We'll tell you all about that. Welcome back to the program, Mrs. Kasia Davis, a performer in RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion at Essex. A long resume of RuPaul's Drag Race and local performance. Hello.
Hello, hello. I'm so glad to be here.
It's nice to have you here. It's nice to have Aggie Dune, who's hosting RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion at Essex. Hello, Aggie.
Well, hello, gorgeous. How are you?
Who are you talking to?
just you.
Well, I thought you were talking to Tim. Tim Evanicki is a business partner for Drag Me to the Stage, which is presenting RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion at Essex. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
The event that we're talking about is 1 week from tonight.
That's right.
Thursday, June 20th. You want to jump in there first, Mrs. Kasia Davis, because I heard you jump in there. Next Thursday night, right?
Next Thursday night, it's going to be fabulous. It's an invasion of gals from RuPaul's Drag Race. Thorgy Thor, Maddie Morphosis, of course, Darian Lake, a local celebrity, and
yourself.
Plasma. And then, of course, myself. You know, I've got to be there. I'm so excited to bring these gals to the city. As mentioned, Tim Evanicki here is my business partner for Drag Me to the Stage, and we have decided to just begin to bring more of these celebrities to our area and really celebrate this whole celebration of drag, along with my longtime sister and celebrity, Aggie Dune, as the host. I mean, what kind of a night? This is the best night ever.
It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much glamour, you don't know what to do with it.
Lots of glamour. Aggie, you'll be hosting. Is that comfortable for you? Would you rather be performing, hosting?
Oh, if you're hosting, you're in charge. I like that a lot more. So, yeah, no, I'm
Do you want to switch chairs? Do you want to host this summer?
Exactly.
I'm just here to take over the world.
Well, honestly, the fact of the matter is Aggie Dune has auditioned for RuPaul's Drag Race since the beginning and for whatever reason hasn't cast. And Drag Me to the Stage really wants to celebrate not only these RuPaul's Drag Race stars, but also celebrities like Aggie Dune, who are just, I mean, have been leading the way for years. So we're thrilled to have her hosting.
You know, in a different context here, what Mrs. Davis just said could be viewed, and knowing Mrs. Davis, you know that there's almost nobody in this industry, line of work, a performance industry.
Right.
There's almost nobody who could do what Mrs. Davis just did, which is like, this is not a backhanded compliment. Mrs. Davis lifts up everybody else. And that's like who you are as a person. So when
you say
that Aggie Dune should have been cast, you're not like, hey, Aggie Dune, you weren't cast. It was like, I love you and you should be cast.
Yes, yeah. I do love her. And she's taught me everything right from the beginning. She even told me when she first saw me, she goes, don't be afraid to try and look pretty. And
And I'm still waiting.
And still waiting. No, but we've been best friends. We've been business partners. We've been doing shows for years. And honestly, whatever the reasons are that a reality television show doesn't pick somebody, I want them, Aggie Dune, Ambrosia Salad, to experience what it's like to have drag celebrated in a way that wasn't when we were first starting out.
Well, fair enough. And I just love that about you, by the way.
Well, thank you.
I have such admiration for someone who truly is happy for other people's success. Even no matter how they are doing, and that's a really beautiful quality to have. It's a hard quality to have because it's competitive. Drag's competitive, isn't it, Aggie?
Oh, yeah. It's a full contact sport. And I say, let the drag games begin. But yes, it's competitive. But what we do is try to, like, you know, egg each other on to get better. And so if, oh, she went over better tonight, I'm going to have to, like, I'm going to have to get new outfits. My hair has to be even bigger. It helps lift each other up because we're pushing each other to go farther and better. And if we're having more fun doing all this and pushing each other to be the best that we can be, then the crowd's going to have even more fun. So, and that's what it's really about, that the crowd coming to just celebrate all this. It's just everybody wins when there's a fight. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, that's the hard part, Mrs. Davis. Like, it's not everybody wins. And sometimes you get eliminated and you're like watching this and you're like, how is this person eliminated? I mean, like, I don't know how competitive you are in other parts of your life, but is it antithetical to who you... Tim is smiling.
I always win. My parents taught me, no matter what, you find a way to win. And what do I mean by that? You take your experience and you learn from it. You build from it. And RuPaul's not going to tell me that I'm not, you know, the best drag queen in the world. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to gather people like I have for 18 years previous to doing drag who are better than me in certain areas and form something together that the audience will be able to see themselves. The audience will not just be, oh, here's somebody who just thinks they're so fantastic and so full of themselves. They're going to see community on the stage because that's really what drag is about. Drag is about bringing people together through this crazy fun art form where we're celebrating our uniqueness. But in the end, when we gather all together, somebody might be unique like myself or Aggie, but in the end, we show how similar we all really are.
Oh, man. I mean, Tim, you couldn't have said it better yourself, I don't think. But you want to describe how you kind of became a business partner for Drag Me to the Stage and what you hope people are going to experience next Thursday?
Yeah, of course. So I'm actually a Rochester native, grew up here. Aggie Dune was one of the first drag queens I ever saw. And so it's really an honor to be back here and working with this group of queens that sort of helped raise me up in the LGBT community here in Rochester. And being able to make sure that proud tradition carries on is something that's really important to me. In my other life, in my other career, I work with teenagers in musical theater and getting them into college. And so I work with a lot of LGBT students that are looking for that representation in the art form that they're going into. So having met Mrs. Kasha Davis a few years ago when I was here in Rochester doing a tour of Naked Boy Singing that I was producing, we reconnected and have sort of been in touch since then. And so when this opportunity came up to sort of start working together and growing the brand here in Rochester and bringing in some other bigger talent from other areas as well, that was something that I was really excited about.
Next Thursday,
yeah,
starting at 8 p.m. at Essex. Essex is on University and a new venue there, EssexRock.com. You can get tickets there. What do you think it's going to be like next Thursday?
Someone described on one of our social media pages, they described the lineup of queens as chaotic, and I kind of loved that. It is not all the same type of drag performer across the board. We have people like Thorgy Thor. Mrs. Kasha Davis described Thorgy as a real-life Muppet, I think, at one point. Yeah. We have people like Mrs. Kasha Davis, who's the queen of the cul-de-sac. And then we have Maddie Morphosis, who is her own special kind of drag as well. Maddie identifies as a straight male and has a wife and was the first heterosexual drag queen on RuPaul's Drag Race. Am I correct?
You're correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Plasma, who is a very popular queen right now that was just recently on season 16 and is new, fresh blood, thrown in with some of the old timers.
Mm-hmm.
And
careful
it's
with that
great
word.
What did you say?
With the seniors who got to get back to the home.
The seasoned queens, the more seasoned performers, we'll say it that way.
And then Darian Lake mops the floor up with her sexiness and bawdiness
and sassiness.
Yeah.
So I want to ask a little bit about some of what you're hearing here is tremendous improv. Are you all trained at improv or is that just, have you always been able to do this? Because over time, of course, I've grown to learn, and producer Megan Mack has been not only a great improver, but someone who coaches and teaches. I've really learned that the art form of improv is, I mean, the best are amazing, and you are all very good at this. I mean, Kasia, are you trained at improv?
Well, I went to school for theater, and my parents insisted that I also take a double major in business, and because they said, who do you know that actually can make a career out of, you know, theater or performing? And I was like, I'm going to show you. And that took a long time. It took a long time to get to a place where I can actually say it's a career. But, yes, I'm a theater major, and to me, it's... That is what I really responded to when I would see Aggie and Pandora and Darian out of the clubs, and they just look so sexy and pretty, and I was like, I love it. But then I went and I saw Miss Richfield 1981, who is a cabaret artist, who has a message, sings live, and I said, oh, that's what I want to do. And that is what the cast didn't have in Rochester, so I was excited to bring theater-type drag camp, which is really something that I think is celebrated in the UK, like panto there, which is the type of drag.
Panto
drag. And they have that primarily around the holidays. And everyone, by the way, enjoys it, not just the LGBTQIA+ community. You know, people come out like the Nutcracker or A Christmas Carol to see the panto stories. And these characters are drag queens. And they're over the top and maybe not the most pretty lady, you know, and just silly and comedic, and I just loved it.
That the idea of just being able to roll, whether it's Drag Me to Brunch or the many different venues that you perform in, I mean, on reality TV shows, you're so good at just rolling with whatever is thrown at you, which is a great life skill to have, by the way. How do you help people understand the value of improv and the value of yes and yes and, I guess?
Listen. First, any kind of conversation, the most important factor is to listen. And I think the second thing is to have a beginning, middle, and an end. So when you're responding, sometimes we can go on, and especially if we're not exactly sure how we're going to be answering the question. But have an internal kind of sense when you should wrap that statement up.
I love that. That's great advice. Aggie, are you trained in improv?
What? Who? What? Me? No. No. No, actually. I've
You've just been able
training.
To do this since you were four or something
Yeah.
Like that?
Well, I think it came from, you know, being bullied in school. You got to think quick, because bullies generally aren't that smart. So you can kind of confuse them with humor and improv real quick. And they're like, wait, did you just insult me? But by the time they figured it out, I've already ran off. So I found that was just a life skill, survival skill to, like, you know, to entertain, to confuse, and to survive.
I mean, that's wise, but that's heartbreaking.
But you can turn something negative into something positive all the time. So you can take I always say that high school and the bullying it's not a negative thing, because it taught me how to change my clothes real quick in gym class, which works for when we do our shows and we do our quick changes.
Aggie, don't make me laugh at your bullying.
But it's true. This story reminds me, my mother taught me when I was a little boy, girl, gal, girl, boy, fella, I was being bullied, and she said to me, Eddie, just compliment the bully. They won't know what to do with the positivity. And so in our household, an Italian household, we, much like Tim is wearing today, we called a shirt a blouse. And so the bully was wearing a jersey, and I said, he was calling me, you know, a derogatory gay term. And I said, well, I love your blouse. Well, the whole hallway laughed. And it was the first time I heard laughter. And I said, ooh, I deflected the negativity. And that began the process of being maybe a little bit sassy or being in the moment and being able to get people to laugh through some of it. You know, oftentimes anger, any kind of anger that people are bullying, it's fear. It's fear behind that. And so it's easy to project with anger. And so if you can get them laughing, maybe they're going to be like, oh, maybe this person's not so bad.
Wow. Aggie, how old were you when you were first bullied?
Oh, my God. Like old enough to walk, and but my walk definitely had a little sass in it. So it was like, just from like a little kid. Yeah, I don't know what it is that little other people, even when you're a little kid, they can single you right out and go, that one's different. I go, not different, fabulous.
Right.
So, you know, you get a sense of self really quick when everyone around you, even your educators at the time, were, you know, you're a bit different. Let's kind of treat you differently. So then it helps you understand who you are. So, yes, it's tough. And I think that people who get bullied, their skin gets thicker, but they also learn a lot of other life skills that they end up applying as they get older. So it's a horrible thing to go through, but I just find, like, what can I take away from this that I can build on to make something better? And then if you can use that same thing to help that next generation behind you, like, and say, you know, you're not the odd one, you're just like me. So that's why we go out and do these shows, and we want to represent to these other kids out there who maybe don't see anybody like them and say, there's somebody like me. I'm not alone in the world. We had just done a show out in, God, where was that? The one in the middle of nothing, the prison one.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
When was that?
No, it's Albion. Is that a place?
Yes.
Albion.
Is there a prison near there?
There is a prison.
Okay. So yeah. We weren't at the prison.
Right, exactly.
No, just to clarify. But a mother and son came to that show, and they, we did a meet and greet afterwards, and then the son was maybe, what, like late teens, maybe teens, 17 maybe or so, and he was so excited to meet us and just like, oh my God, I want to hug you. And I'm like, oh, it's great to meet you. And his mom said, thank you so much for coming to a small town like this so that, you know, we don't see a lot of this here as openly as you do in the city. And this just means the world to us that I now know, meeting all of you, that there's a community waiting for my son when he finally leaves home. And that just made her feel that. So it was like, wow, that's why we go do all this.
Story after story like that. And really, Aggie taught me, as hosts, as the drag queen that is out there on stage, like conducting the show and being on the microphone, we're ambassadors for the LGBTQIA plus community and helping to bring people together and to show them. And time and time again, I've had stories where people, I think I've told you before, but I'll repeat during the drag story hour, where a dad comes up to me in tears afterwards saying, thank you for showing me that my child has a community. You know, if only my father saw that when I was young, he would have spent less time, because my first bully was my father. And it was a matter of him trying to keep me safe at a time in the 70s and 80s where, you know, it was a scary time with the AIDS epidemic, and just saying like, okay, you need to be straight. You need to speak lower. You need to do all these different things. And we ended up having a horrible relationship for the majority of our life until the end. But the bottom line is, if he only had these examples, this is why I'm so passionate about what we do, whether it's a nightclub act, a story hour, or a brunch, it's showing people that we are people, that we are thriving, that we are happy and healthy. And then maybe when they go back to the Thanksgiving table and Uncle Bill says something inappropriate, they can say, you know what? These people are fantastic. These people are people. They deserve respect, too.
You're very loving and... I don't know if defensive is the right word, but I think that you're showing real perspective about your father.
Oh my gosh. I'm so lucky to have had sobriety to show me, this summer I'll be 9 years sober, knock on wood, one day at a time, to show me that I had to own my side of the street, that relationship went two ways. And in the end, we got close enough where he was able to see my perspective, or he actually, I know you know I'm a big star. I was starring at a show in Scranton, Pennsylvania at a Toyota dealership. And that's true. The truth is always the funniest. Anyway, he came to the show and he saw me sing the songs and talk about my mom in heaven. And he came backstage and said, Eddie, you look beautiful. Not Kasha. He saw me because I was able to be true to myself, that I stood my ground, and we had a closeness towards the end of his life that I never would have expected. And when I posted, you know, as you do on social media, I posted this picture of the two of us. His friend said, did you see Mrs. Kasha Davis at the Toyota dealership? He said, no, in the email, that's my son, Eddie, and I'm proud. And so I got to have that email message from that special box that we all keep on the side of the bed, and he's passed, but we had that short period of time because of that, looking at myself and giving him some forgiveness too. Whew.
I mean, I'm only calling you Kasia because you're in drag here. I mean, I'm going to make sure I'm using the right terms here.
Well, that's fine.
It's Kasia's good.
It's Kasia
right now. But for your father at that moment, it was, I don't have to pretend that's not Eddie. That is Eddie. That is who Eddie is, and I love it.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing that I never would have expected. I think both from sobriety but also drag and from the family that I created that taught me to love myself. And that's really, that's the scary thing about this. You know, I was in Birmingham, Alabama over the weekend, and there's recently a shooting there in one of the nightclubs, and people were just holding my hand saying, thank you for coming. And just the fact that people isolate, they get depressed, they use drugs or alcohol, because they feel like they don't belong. And we can create family for one another and lift each other up, and then people can succeed and excel.
Tim, were you on the receiving end of any bullying in your life?
Of course. I grew up in a small town. I grew up in Honeyoy, just south of here in Rochester. And of course it came with the bullying. And I've even, as an adult now, had an opportunity to go back to my high school and speak to the GSA, the Gay Student Alliance there, which... shocking and wonderful that it even has a gay student alliance in Honeyoy, New York.
Not when you were growing up.
No, gosh, no, not when I was growing up. And I'm actually doing a little bit of work with that, with the school. And there's quite a bit of a community of LGBT students there that still face some of the same things that I did, but not to that same extent. They certainly have more representation. I'm lucky enough to be awarding a scholarship to an LGBT student in Honeyoy. It's called the Evanicki Equality Award, and the school is giving that away at graduation this year, which I thought was really, really sweet. I thought there'd be a statue of me or something for being Honeyoy's first gay, but whatever.
Hold tight.
I just tell you this. I don't think you were the first gay person in Honeyoy.
You know what? It's funny.
There had to have been before.
Well, I think I was the first out student.
I know.
He was the only gay in the village.
The only gay in the village. That was me.
Wearing his fabulous blouse.
I've been brought back a couple times now, and they always introduce me like that to the students and the faculty, like, this was the first out gay person in our school. And
they should just call you the first gay.
Like, the first gay.
Look, everybody look.
The first gay. It's cute, though. They do a little Pride, Honeyoy Pride t-shirt every year, and they always send me one. Like, it's really
nice.
There's
so much beauty, actually, in this
story. And
there really is.
What I love about what Kasia was saying earlier about being ambassadors is that these drag shows and performances are now happening in these small towns and showing those students that they're also something to be respected and revered and not to hide. I mean, we have a show coming up in Naples at the Naples Pride Festival, which 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I was in high school, to think that there'd be a Pride Festival in Naples, New York, would have been a wild idea that I never would have believed. And we're doing a drag brunch in Naples, and there's a festival that day, and that's right around the corner from Honeyoy. So that's a really cool, I guess, sign of the times and ways that people are sort of progressing the way they look at this.
Are there any places that you haven't felt safe or you wouldn't go back to?
I was in Arkansas, and I am trying to remember off the top of my head where it was, but so we Little Rock. It was Little Rock, Arkansas, and so it was a Pride Festival, and part of what I do, as you all know, is that sometimes I'll bring the little kids that are there up to do a kick line and, you know, get them included in the dance. And so I came off stage and the promoter said to me, did you feel safe? And I thought, well, how rude. I know I'm big, but the stage was sturdy. It's fine. Like, and I thought they meant about the stage. And then he said, oh, no, if you look up above the buildings, we have all the snipers just in case anything happened. And I just literally, like, I felt like my entire body was hot outside. I just felt cold. And I was just like, I imagined, God forbid, somebody decided to shoot at me with a bunch of kids on stage, and the horror as they're just full of joy and just doing a kick line and having fun with Mrs. Kasia Davis, who wears glasses and big hair and a sparkly dress. And there were literally, as I looked across the tops of the buildings, and so I immediately was like, where's the VIP area? So we went to that. And then these gentlemen and ladies were coming through and going up to the rooftop. And I was like, I was dumbfounded. But so did I feel safe? Not after I saw that, after I heard about that. But then at the same time, they did their job. They were doing. But the fact that we need that at a festival where people are just celebrating who they are, just literally broke my heart and then told me I need to keep doing this.
You know, the irony was, such as it is, that I was going to ask, you know, well, maybe that was like a decade ago, but I think it might be more volatile in certain places now just because of where the culture wars have gone. I don't know.
Well, there's a bomb threat just last week in the Catskills for a story hour, and we're headed to the Catskills this weekend to do shows there. And that's wild to me that this is we're doing a story hour at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. And when the executive director said to me, well, what do we need for security? And I was like, well, they're going to be 6 year olds. I think we'll be fine. And she's like, no. There's some town folk that we might want to make sure that there's security for. So we're going to have police escorts that day, which it's reading storybooks to children.
Where was this?
We'll be in Hurleyville this weekend. We're doing
this weekend, a whole weekend
called Drag Me to the Catskills. So we have several shows this weekend in the Catskills. And in Hurleyville, we have a police escort for Drag Story Hour.
How does that feel, Aggie?
It's always odd, yet at the same time, you want to make it when you are doing a story hour, which I've done with Mrs. Kasha Davis here in town at Blackfriars, and they've had some elevated threats of like, oh, something could happen. So they have their security at the front. I always feel my job is to make sure that everybody feels comfortable and safe, that the kids feel safe, that they're there, that this shouldn't make them alarmed, to make sure that their parents say, this is just a precaution, but there's nothing to be worried about. But at the same time, there are times it does make you feel a little like extra aware. I think the one to your question about if we've been somewhere that you felt unsafe, it was more it was just a week after the Pulse nightclub shooting. Mm. And then we were in the parade of the Pride Parade in New Orleans. And it was a week later. And everybody here was like, don't go. I know you guys are the celebrity grand marshals, but don't go. You're going to be on a float. It's just after this shooting. And I said, all the more reason that we have to be there.
Right.
To show, don't be scared. Don't run and hide, because then they win. So as drag performers, our thing is go out there and be that visible representation that we're still here. We're not afraid. And if we're not afraid out here on a moving target, you guys can be okay to be out and celebrate with everyone else. So it's crazy to be in those kind of situations. But at the same time, if you just keep your eye on what your job is that day, make sure that you're that ambassador to make sure everybody else feels welcome, included, and safe. That's what we do.
And this world needs to go from, and if you have a disagreement about a drag queen reading a story to children, let's have a conversation before we jump to a bomb threat.
Like, there's got to be something between the two.
There's somewhere in between where maybe we could sit at a table and have a discussion. Drag is an art form. And in that art form, there are types of performances that are meant for children. There are types of performances that are meant for all ages. And then there are certainly types of performances that are meant for the late night, you know, R-rated type performances. So it's like saying all of music is appropriate for children. All of theater is appropriate for children. All films are appropriate for children. Of course not. But identify the individual. Talk to the individual and understand what you're getting yourself into before you make that assumption. And then certainly before you go to the level of a bomb threat.
I think that is a reasonable request. I think that is a and the remarkable part of all of this is if people actually wanted to reach out and talk to people like Mrs. Kasha Davis, Aggie Dune, they could easily do it. Those conversations have been happening for years. And I try to always be the person who's thinking as generously as I can to people with different ideas. My idea should not just drive the show. I have an obvious bias here, but I hope it's a bias of love and openness and celebration. But regardless, for the people who are not comfortable, that's why Mrs. Kasha Davis' story of your father is so powerful. And the generosity you show towards your father is so powerful, because you're not sitting here saying, well, you know, my dad was a bigot and I kicked him out of my life and we never talked again. It was, he didn't have these experiences. He didn't know the context. He wasn't really sure. And it took time. But you had this amazing, amazing breakthrough. The door is always open, but you're right. You don't open doors with bomb threats.
Right.
You do it with dialogue. I will also say, for listeners who aren't aware, there's a Joy Wave song, Rochester's own Joy Wave, from their not their latest album, which is just out this month, but the previous album called Goodbye Tommy. And it's a hard song to hear. And in fact, Daniel Armbruster from Joywave told us on this program last month that they have a hard time playing in concert because people know it's about Pulse. And like, it's this beautiful song, but it's about someone dying at Pulse and living with who we are as a culture that this is happening. Did you feel different after Pulse?
No, of course. To be honest with you, any of these just shootings that are happening in what is considered someone's safe place, like a nightclub or a school, stops me in my tracks. Top Hat Eddie is somebody that we knew personally and was one of the victims at Pulse. And my first RuPaul's Drag Race cruise, he was a part of, and he was so kind and so generous and so sweet. And I remember standing in our backyard with our kids and just, at the time, I don't remember what age they were, probably probably early 20s, but just sitting together and just being like, oh my goodness. And they're fearful. And my siblings are fearful. Like, what are you, sure you want to put yourself in that position? And I absolutely do. I have some rituals that I do before I hit a stage in hopes to put out the positivity and to be aware of my surroundings. And it's sad, but this is my life work. To spread this positivity, to spread this joy, to show people that they need to show their light, and it's my pleasure to do it. But it comes with some weight.
Tim, did you feel any difference after Pulse?
I actually was an entertainment manager at a gay nightclub just down the street from Pulse the night it happened. So I was working and knew several people that were victims that night. And right about 2 o'clock, when we were closing up the bar and people were starting to filter out, all of us on staff there, our phones started lighting up and pinging. And it was our friends who were at Pulse and other friends letting us know what was happening. And that was a sleepless night for me. We were up all night. And that next morning, where I worked, the Parliament House, sort of became home base for people who were affected directly. New people there were waiting to hear about people. So yes, I was very much affected and was right there during it and lived in Orlando for the whole recovery for weeks and weeks and weeks and months afterwards.
My God.
Yeah.
I am so sorry. Well, I mean, I know Don in East Rochester wants to comment on issues of safety. I'll grab that phone call now. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to congratulate all your guests there because they are remarkable, remarkable people. And this is June, and we're celebrating the anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion. And it was for the most part. Drag queens, effeminate gay men, and other assorted people who were not accepted, even in the general gay society, who fought back. It is them that we owe this celebration. And I want to bring up that in Rochester, we are seeing a revival of what had once been the Gay Alliance in the Genesee Valley, and I think it's going to be called the Rochester Rainbow Union. So, and it's being started now. And Evan, you might want to have some of the people from that on one of your future shows so that we could learn about it. But overall, I'm rather pessimistic about my community, our community, rising to the challenge of the bigotry that your guests have just described, the bigotry of the so-called Christian nationalists who want to force their beliefs on the entire population. I'm a little pessimistic about my community's response to that. But at least in Rochester, it's beginning to look a little bit better. There's some optimism that I have in the Rochester community. And again, I would just like to say I really appreciate what your guests are doing. And who would have thought that there would be a gay pride in Naples, New York? I mean, I go to Naples quite often, and I never would have imagined there would be a gay pride. If you get one in Spencerport, New York, which is the town I grew up in, let me know, because I'll be there.
Don, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate that. I don't know. Naples is a pretty fabulous place, I think.
I think so.
Absolutely. All the wine? it was bound to happen.
Right.
Well, not just for the wine.
Right.
Don, thank you for that phone call. Our guests, you just heard Tim Evanicki, who's the business partner for Drag Me to the Stage, which is presenting RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion at Essex. It's a week from tonight, Thursday, June 20th, starting at 8 p.m. at Essex on University Avenue. And Mrs. Kasha Davis, Aggie Dune are here. They will be there. Aggie's hosting. Kasha is performing. And they've got performers there. Much more information at EssexRock.com if you want information on that. And, you know, Don's talking about being disappointed or being his frustration with parts of different communities. I mean, I mentioned at the outset of this hour, we could have found any number of news stories about whether it's protests or state bans. Most of the time, my observation so far is that these legislatures, usually in pretty red states, they want to ban drag performance. And they do that, but then courts kind of come in and say, like, well, you really can't really do that. And but now, you know, sometimes you get a federal judge who's appointed by, you know,
someone.
Fair. And then the question is, how high does this go? So far, the U.S. Supreme Court has declined to weigh in. They may eventually weigh in. I don't know. But I mean, does any of that stuff worry you, Aggie? I mean, the legislative landscape where these states are trying to ban it?
Living here in Rochester and in New York State, not as much, but having so many people in the drag community that we're friends with, that we've gotten to perform with and work with across the country, and seeing how this would affect their livelihood, that they we have friends who perform in Tennessee, and I'm like, why? But they're terrified because they had put through briefly in Tennessee until it was overturned that they couldn't perform anywhere where you could be seen from a public street. So if it's a brunch and it happens to have a patio, if a child can see you from that, it could be a felony and you could be in prison for up to 10 years. So some of these things are really scary. But I always say that hell has no fury like a drag queen slightly inconvenienced. So that just activates all of us to go out there and just be more vocal, to be more visible, and to do more wonderful interviews like this with you to help just let everyone know. It's like as much as you might be afraid of something, when you turn on the lights, what was scary in the dark is no longer as scary. So I always just say, turn on the lights and just realize I might just have more hair and makeup, mm-hmm. but I'm just like you.
Hell hath no fury like a drag queen slightly inconvenienced is amazing.
I do like that quote. You know, I have to add, when I think about these legislations and the attempts, again, we're focusing on drag queens, but what really I think the target is our trans brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. and specifically our trans brothers and sisters, people of color. That is where people are attacking, and we'll use the drag queens because we're usually out front, as mentioned, loud, colorful, and we're going to. And unfortunately, that is the attack that hurts the most because, you know, when you try to take away any of the healthcare for these mm-hmm. people, that healthcare specifically is most likely counseling, and where people are feeling so out of place and suicidal. And to take that away, that's dangerous. And so that's where, to me, they get blanketed over drag performers when really the attack is on our trans brothers and sisters.
Tim, are you concerned by what you're seeing?
Concerned, of course. I don't know that I would go as far as the caller that just said and say pessimistic. Hmm. One thing you can say about the LGBT community is we're an organized people.
We
love to organize things. And I think it was said too that the Stonewall riot started, you know, with a drag queen with a brick. This is why we don't let our drag queens have bricks. Together, I think we will come through this. It's going to probably be ugly for a while. It's ugly now. There's no getting around that. But I have every confidence and every faith in the world that we're going to come out on the other side of this, and everyone's going to realize eventually that they were on the wrong side of it. They were on the wrong side of history. And so, no, I wouldn't say that I'm not pessimistic.
Well, Tim, you know, you described growing up, and you know, all three of you dealt with bullying at various times. Have you had any moments, kind of the way Aggie and Kasia have described working through not only bullying, but sometimes a breakthrough or seeing change? Have you had moments where someone you used to have a very different relationship has changed? Have you seen that evolution? Or have you decided, you know what, I think I'm going to get away from this for a while, and maybe I'll come back in the future?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned earlier, I go back to my hometown often now that my husband and I lived in Orlando I was there for 20 years, and we just moved back up to this area, partially because we didn't feel 100% safe in Florida anymore as a same-sex couple, as a same-sex married couple. But going back to my hometown, the first day I met with that GSA and spoke to the kids, some of the LGBT students in that room were telling me who their parents were, and they were some of my bullies in high school. And I thought that was delicious. So that was sort of my comeuppance, I guess, with them, to see that. But you know, I said to those kids too, I'm like, all of those people who are my bullies, they all still live in this small town. They never got out. They never went anywhere. They never explored beyond. And there's nothing wrong with living in your small town, but to never have gone beyond that, that was the first thing that sprang to mind. In fact, I think several of the students who applied for that scholarship I mentioned, their parents were some of my bullies.
That's an amazing story.
I love that, actually, yeah.
And I also want to key in on something Aggie said in jest entirely about Tennessee. When you said, you know, performing in Tennessee, and people say, why? Somebody smarter than me recently admonished me for describing red states, blue states, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And here's a really important point about that. We really are pretty polarized, and we can measure that in a lot of different ways, and we do. I mean, regular listeners might have heard me say this, but you'll hear me say it again, that in 1976, almost 50 years ago, 1976 presidential election, when Jimmy Carter was elected, only about a quarter of Americans lived in landslide counties, which just means that a 20-point favor in the presidential election in your county. And now that same number live in super landslide counties, and roughly 2/3 of Americans live in landslide counties. So you don't even really live near all that many people who think differently. And yet you actually do. It's still thousands of people. It's thousands and thousands of people in counties, in states, et cetera. So a red state could have hundreds of thousands of progressives. A blue state could have hundreds of thousands of political conservatives. The city of Rochester, where Republicans rarely run, there's plenty of Republicans here. And in rural counties where Democrats don't run for office, there's a lot of Democrats. And the way people think about issues. So you can say a red county or a red state, it really does a disservice, or a blue county or a blue state. It does a disservice to people who think differently, because they exist. And it's so easy to just erase and forget that. So now you think about kids growing up, especially, you know, a Tim, a little Miss Kasia, a little Aggie. And if they're in a red state, they're told, like, you can't, you know, well, this doesn't exist here or whatever, or it's just forgotten. But of course they exist. Of course they do. And I think it's really important that you go back and, as the first gay person in Honeywell, well, they're building a statue for you.
That's
very much.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, when you talk about the difficult times, let's talk about the positive times.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fact that we do have social media now. And social media can be negative, but it also brings people closer together. So if you're in one of these communities and you feel like you're alone, you befriend somebody like Aggie Dune or Mrs. Kasia Davis, et cetera, and suddenly your tribe is bigger. We are doing successful drag story hours when I would never have imagined that when I first started doing drag. We have drag brunches where middle-aged women and their mothers are coming to drag shows and saying it's the best time they've ever had. And I just recently taught a course at SUNY Brockport with Danny Hoskins on the art of drag. I mean, so there is a lot of good happening. And that gets balanced out by people having to raise their voice, too. So, I mean, thinking about when I first started and Aggie was teaching me to make sure I got there just in time and run into the club late, late at night. And we're reading books to children and we're doing daytime brunches. I mean, progress is being made.
So let's end on a fun note here.
Yes.
Yeah.
So as you heard Mrs. Kasia Davis say earlier, you would never say music categorically is always good for kids. You would never say every movie is good for kids. Drag is an art form. And there is drag that is perfectly beautiful for kids, and then there's drag that is for the adults.
Right.
Next Thursday night, RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion is in what category?
For the adults.
For the adults.
It's adults.
18 and over.
18 and over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next Thursday at Essex, starting at 8 p.m. And Mrs. Kasia Davis, as someone who teaches the art of drag,
yes,
you got to give us a little, like what are you teaching? Like,
oh, my gosh, it's amazing. I brought in, you know, of course, Aggie and some of the other performers and then some people from nationally where they're sharing their experience. Again, we got in over our head a little bit because we wanted to teach drag, which is like all in one semester, teaching all of music or all of theater. We were like, wait a minute. So, you know, there's theory, there's the history, and then there's performance. And of course, they gravitated towards the performance, but we wanted to give them a little bit more because in some of the cases of this youth, all they know is RuPaul's Drag Race. They didn't realize there are other people who have careers in cabaret artists and people like Aggie Dune and other people who have been doing it for many years. And so that was really important to me. And again, we are building a community of people that are not just feeling good about themselves, but we're giving some space for an ally. You know, not everybody in there wanted to do drag. Not everybody in that class was a member of the LGBTQIA community. They're allies. And our allies want to support. And so this gives them an opportunity to just have fun with it. Because really, ultimately, most of the time, that's what it comes down to. Just truly having fun.
Okay, so Aggie and Kasia, true or false?
Yeah.
You can teach performance, but you're either fabulous or you're not, and you can't. It's either has to be born into you, or you can learn it. You can learn it.
You can learn skills, but fabulous is what you're born with.
I think. Well, I think there's a degree of a star quality that you're born with. I mean, when you hit a stage, if you could really truly communicate with that audience, that is something that is. It's possible to teach, and I know this is what you do. So, but I think there's a degree of it that you're born with.
I'm also curious. I think there is a misunderstanding that all performers are extroverts. Extroversion and introversion is just about where you get your energy from. And extroverts are energized by being with people. Introverts doesn't mean they don't like to be with people or don't need to be with people, but it can be draining, and they find a little more energy in solitude. So it doesn't mean that you can't be a fantastic, fabulous performer, even if you're an introvert, right?
Right.
Agreed.
I'm way introverted.
Exactly.
Really?
Aggie? Oh, my God. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this whole hour is kind of draining for you?
Well, no, because I'm getting so much energy from you. But yeah, I prefer like a lot of alone time and not big crowds and that. If I'm going to be in a big crowd, be on a stage with a light.
Right.
But gotcha. Other than that, like, you know, I'm really introverted.
Mr. Davis and I were just literally talking about this last night. We were saying, wow, you know, we have this house. It's all set up. There's a pool. There's all these chairs. It's just the two of us. Why do we have so many? We have all this
you
outdoor
like the
furniture.
Idea that you might host people.
Oh, we're going to have people over. No one comes over. Well, our kids on occasion, but they're at their 30s now. So it's like, oh my gosh, we need grandkids soon so that we can like fill this house up again with some excitement.
As an ambivert, I mean, I'll come over and have a drink. But I mean, if no one's filling your chairs. No, it's funny because funny as in it's kind of peculiar because you look at that and you say, Do we feel like we have to have this set up? But you might just be more comfortable, just you and Mr. Davis, right?
Sometimes it's nice to just have, especially when you're really out there and you're giving. And I encourage myself to be as open about everything as possible. That sometimes I just need quiet. And
sometimes that comes with a price of like that you've gave so much that you have nothing left and you just want that
recharge.
Quiet time.
Need a
you
recharge.
Have a social battery that I've got so much to give every week and then I need a couple of days off. I get that.
Where are you at, Tim? Extrovert, introvert? Ambivert?
I think ambivert. Yeah, there's times where I just want to be all by myself and sort of recharge alone. But, you know, I can certainly turn it on in a crowd or in a social situation. Yeah.
Tim, I'm grateful to meet you, to know you. And I'm grateful for this hour with all three of our guests. Let's close with this point. I know you want people to come out next Thursday. And Kasia and Aggie have been talking about all the positive things. I mean, in this climate, this weird climate where there's all these headlines in different states about, you know, bans and et cetera, they focus a lot on the positive. What's the positive you want to leave with listeners?
The positive that I want to leave with listeners? I think that here in Rochester, we have an oddly high percentage of really great drag and really great opportunities for people to see themselves represented on stage. And I think shows like what's happening next week is a really wonderful opportunity. If you are a person who does identify as LGBT, it's awesome you have an opportunity to see that represented. But if you're not and you are seeing all of these articles and headlines, as you said, what a great opportunity to come expose yourself to or get exposure to the art of drag and our community and have some fun with us. And the positive thing is that that's possible now. And we're able to sit on a daytime talk show on news radio and talk about that and not have to hide anymore.
What's the best drag city in the country, by the way?
Rochester.
Rochester. Yeah,
well, I mean, no, don't be know. Homers. Okay, Rochester is amazing, punches above its weight. Where it's like, otherwise, where it's like the center of drag?
Oh my gosh.
Is it NYC? Is it LA? Is it?
I would
NYC
say
NYC and LA are equals, but LA, we've got a twin for each one of us over there.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It's really crazy. Delta like Work, Ethelina Cam, yeah. Morgan McMichaels. These are drag race royalty that are like, it's literally like, we're working on both sides of the country.
Yeah.
Well, listen, the music means we got to go, but you can see all of our guests next Thursday night at Essex on University Avenue for RuPaul's Drag Race Invasion starting at 8 p.m. EssexRock.com for tickets and information. Aggie's going to host. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Mrs. Kasia Davis will be performing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Always good. And Tim Evanicki, thank you for telling your story here. From all of us at Connections, thank you for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.